Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. We've got such amazing listeners, and they've got incredible questions. Today, it's another edition of Ask the Guys. That's when you tell us what's on your mind, and we do our best to give you some ideas and information. You're going to love today's show on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way for you to get everything you've dreamed of? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Create Your Future, the 2021 Goals Retreat, January 8th to 10th in beautiful Lake Las Vegas, Nevada. This unique weekend event has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the thousands of people that have attended. Hear from some of them and find out more at realestateguysradio.com under events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the live in-person 2021 Goals Retreat on the second weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com to register. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18 today. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Joining me, as usual, it's our financial strategist and co-host, Russell Gregg.
Hey, Robert.
We're going to need some of that financial strategy today because we've got a bunch of awesome questions from our amazing listeners. Every, 8 to 10 weeks, we like to do Ask the Guys. That's our collection of emails that come in from you guys asking all kinds of great stuff. And we've got a wonderful sampling of questions today. Here's how it works. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com. Click the button that says Ask the Guys. We only have two caveats. We are not tax or legal professionals. And secondly, we don't give advice. What we do is give you ideas and information, and you then will sit down with professionals so you can get some advice. We don't know many of the markets you're from or many of the markets you're asking about, but we certainly have an understanding of real estate principles. And with that, let's get right into the grab bag. Question number one comes from Frank in Winkler, Manitoba, Canada. Hey guys, I've been looking into positive cash flow, and I'm wondering if you take a mortgage out on an investment property using current home equity, and the investment property just barely covers the expenses, I can afford to cover them by the way, is this positive cash flow as most people would see it? For example, a mortgage is $900 a month with all expenses, and rent is, say, $800. Technically, I'm paying the difference. But I have read that this is not the correct outlook. What I should say is all expenses are $900 a month, $450 of that is interest, $450 is principal, rent is $800, which means I have a positive cash flow of $350. Is this correct? Thanks. Well, Frank, we start with this question because it's one of the basic understandings of investing in real estate is the basic income formula and where does the cash flow come from? Big picture is this. You have income, which is pretty easy to calculate. If you have a single family home, you've got a single tenant paying a fixed amount of rent. So you have income, and then you have expenses, and expenses are all over the place. There's a group of expenses that stay with the property and help us determine our net operating income. And then there's debt service, which you may or may not have. Now, why wouldn't you have it? Well, if you don't use a loan to buy a property, you still have all those other expenses like property taxes and insurance and utilities and HOA if there is one. But the debt service has to do with your personal situation, how much money you put down, what kind of loan or loans you have. So I think this is an excellent question for our financial strategist.
Yeah, well, there's two different sides to it. There's the math of being the owner and making a business decision, and then there's the math of the way the lender's going to look at it. So not exactly sure the way lending works in Canada, but in the United States, when you're going residential 1-4, you can have a little negative cash flow on paper. So if a property is renting, say, for gross of $1,000 a month, you might get $750 a month of credit towards the expenses of operating the property. And if you're short, you can bring some of your own personal income to bear. Now, whether or not that's a good idea, that's a different discussion. When you do the math, you have to take into consideration not just your current recurring expenses. Those are the easy and obvious things. But, you know, if water heaters go out, if plumbing goes out, if roofs need to be repaired, You have these capital expenses where you should be setting something aside for those things that are eventually inevitably going to happen. Otherwise, you end up in a very unenviable situation where you got a lot of deferred maintenance and the quality of the collateral goes down and the appeal to your tenants goes down, and it just ends up becoming a very unfortunate situation. So I like to look at each individual property on a standalone basis. But to Robert's point, you may need to make sure you do a good, solid, comprehensive budget and go in with your eyes wide open. You're talking here about being, say, $100 a month negative. If I read that right, a mortgage of $900 a month and rent is $800, you're $100 negative just on that cash flow without any expenses. So you're not just a little negative there, you're a whole lot negative. And you cannot scale that. You might own one or two properties like that, but it's like running a business where you're doing all the work yourself and can't afford to hire anybody. You can't grow your business. You can't grow a portfolio doing that. So personally, I wouldn't do it unless you really felt there was some compelling long-term reason. Maybe the market or the property had some real potential you could develop and you're willing to go negative for a period of time. And then you have to build that into your capitalization budget where you have reserves to carry you until you can get it to where it needs to be.
You know, we make money four ways in real estate investing. And I've heard people say it's five or it's six or whatever number, it's four. And those others always fall into one of the four categories. Cash flow is one. That's just one of the ways we make money. So you can buy a property, and if it has higher income than expenses, you have positive cash flow every month. That's awesome. You can keep that property for 30, 50, 100 years and just have cash throw off. But the other ways we make money in real estate are also very interesting. You mentioned $450 principal, $450 interest. I think to Russ's point, there's more expenses than that. And you earlier said $900 included all expenses, but not if you say $450 is principal and $450 is interest. Those are mortgage expenses. When you start out a mortgage, you're paying mostly interest and just a little bit principal. Over time, you're paying more and more principal. And when you pay down principal, that money is yours. You're buying equity in the property with the tenant's income. So the tenant pays down, in this case, $450 of principal. You owe $450 less. Therefore, you own $450 more equity in the property. So over time, that's another way you make money in real estate. But appreciation is probably the biggest one in many, many portfolios. Some markets don't appreciate much. But to Russ's point, if you had a strategic market you could invest in and it was a little bit negative and you could afford it, because you know that the market has all the signs of increasing in absolute value over time, you might make that decision. But you can't make that decision too many times. Robert Kiyosaki is famous for saying, "How many $100 a month negative homes can you own?" Well, a few, but at some point, you only have so much income. Okay, how many $100 a month positive homes can you own? Well, there's really no limit. Now, in reality, there is the lending limit and just all that kind of stuff, but the principle is the same. You want to make sure that fundamentally the numbers work. You, in addition to Russ's great idea of having a reserve for things that go wrong, it's probably also good to have a little ballast for potential vacancy. The two most expensive things in buy and hold real estate are turnover, what it costs to get the unit ready for the next tenant, and vacancy, the period of time when no one's living there and you're still paying all the payments. So I'm glad you're getting your mind around this stuff. I would say that you can approach it from a number of ways. You have to decide what makes sense for you. Great question, Frank. And we've got a bunch of them today. Our next question comes from Mike in East Grand Fork, Minnesota. "Hey guys, I currently own three single family homes free and clear, and I want to buy a property in Arizona for a warm weather escape from Minnesota. Any strategies you can suggest? Right now, I'm pulling in about $2,000 profit per month after expenses." All right, we'll stop there and say Mike knows the math. He knows that his income less his expenses on three houses is putting about $2,000 profit in his pocket. Now, back when I was just learning real estate, my dad was a broker and I was trying to get my mind around it, I said, "Dad, why would anyone ever sell a property that was putting $2,000 a month in their pocket?" And the answer is because you can reallocate that to property or properties that might put $2,500 or $3,000 or $5,000 a month profit and or you can move to a market you like better. So if you own properties free and clear, you have a lot to work with.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we don't really know what the gross value is or how much equity is in those properties or what the cash flow on equity is, whether that's a good investment. So it's always compared to what. So for now, we'll just assume you want to keep those properties. You like them. You like the future. You like the market they're in. You've got plenty of depreciation left that you can use. There's no compelling reason to get rid of them. Then the obvious thing is to put a loan on them and take advantage of today's low interest rates and pick one maybe, and use redirect some of that $2,000 a month cash flow into extracting what would end up becoming a down payment for your Arizona property. If the Arizona property is going to be a second home or second residence and you're not going to be renting it out, then you're going to have to make an allocation to make whatever mortgage payment you need to make there. If you're willing to use the $2,000 a month positive from your rental properties to cover the expense of your vacation property, that's fine. If you're going to rent out property, a lot of people do that in Arizona. They rent it out when they're not in it, and then they only use it for certain parts of the year. So it really just depends on how often you want to use it. But the bottom line is get together with your mortgage professional, find out exactly what loan programs are available to you based on your credit score, your balance sheet, your documentable cash flow, the amount of equity you have in the properties, where they're located, and make sure this is somebody that can help you in both Minnesota and in Arizona.
You know, anytime you're going from one market to another, there are similarities and there are differences. That's why you need a different professional, not only from a licensing standpoint, but just from a market knowledge standpoint, but also beginning with the end in mind. If those three single family homes are just purely ROI and the property you're thinking about buying in Arizona is something you might eventually use or use part-time, like many snowbirds do, then that's going to play into your overall equation. For instance, if it's going to be a second home, you're potentially going to have a different type of financing than if it's a pure investment property. But that's why you need professionals of both sides to help you out. I think it's a great idea to diversify between markets. And I think that if warmer weather is your driver, well, you're going to like Arizona. Great question, Mike. We'll try to get one more in before our break. This question comes from Sean in Lima, Peru. Hey, Robert and Russ, my wife and I are living and working in Peru. We've been working as teachers for 9 years overseas in the Cayman Islands, Latvia, and now Peru. We plan to buy a home here, live in it for several years, then rent it out as a long-term investment when we return home to New York or another destination. As residents, we were able to secure a loan from a local bank in Peru. However, the interest rates are much higher than that of the U.S. I'm curious to learn if you have found a good lender to finance international investment property purchases. All the best. All right, Sean, great question. This is something we know quite a bit about, having purchased and been involved with properties in lots of different countries. So the short answer is this. There's nowhere on earth that I found financing as favorable as in the United States of America. Russ is going to explain why that is. But the big picture is many people that buy in another location, even people who live and work outside and are expats, they often turn to the ability to borrow on property in the U.S. and use those proceeds to buy property in other places. So that's the biggest thing I see people do. Hey, I've got some equity in a rental property in my home in the U.S., and even though I'm not living there, I'm renting it out, I could borrow the property, incur that payment, but that payment is the equivalent of the payment I'd make on a property, in this case, Peru, and I don't have a loan in Peru, I have a loan in the U.S. That's method number one. Method number two is this. People do borrow locally and pay more interest, and there's some reasons for doing that. One of the reasons is that that loan and that creditor have nothing to do with U.S. credit or your tax returns. And so often those loans are made locally by local banks who invest in the property and then the fact that you guys are employed there. So it's a lot less cumbersome. Yeah, the rates are higher, but in a word, you kind of have to get over that. To get extended credit, it's expensive. Hey, Russ, why are U.S. loans so cheap?
They're subsidized. You know, Fannie Freddie are government-sponsored enterprises, and they get an implied used to be an implied benefit of lower risk because they had the implied backing of the government, meaning they were subsidized. So interest rates are always lower on agency money. And I could do a whole thing on that, but that's the bottom line. To your point, Robert, I mean, I think you want to borrow the money where you have access to the cheapest capital. But when you do the math, make sure you factor in your tax situation. So depending on where you're taxed, how the investment would be taxed, how the interest on the borrowing would be taxed, it may affect what you decide to do. So before tax and after tax could be two very different pictures. So we, you know, obviously don't know what your personal situation is, but just make sure that when you're doing that, and then also for the previous conversation we had with Minnesota and Arizona, just make sure you understand when you do the math, you take into consideration not just the interest rate, but the term and the tax and the recourse. What happens if something goes sideways? Can they come after you? So there's some things to consider here, but it's not overly complicated. Just make sure you look at them all when you do the equation.
That's super important. We're really focusing on the mortgage side, but there's a whole nother side to investing internationally. There's the basis of law in the country. There's what do property rights look like? What are their expenses are there? And taxation. Some countries share a tax treaty, and that's different than the countries that don't. So that's a bigger can of worms than we have time to get into today. But certainly, if you're looking at buying a property in a place that you live, that you enjoy, and you'd enjoy it enough that you'd keep the property to rent out, you're just going to want to make sure you understand tenant-landlord laws, their good property management there in place, and is the lender okay with you converting the use of the property? Great questions. It's Ask the Guys Your Questions, Our Answers. Lots more on the way. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
In uncertain times like this, it's great to know there are two things you can always count on. High demand for affordable single-family homes to live in, and Terry Kerr's amazing Memphis team at Mid-South Home Buyers to find, fix, and manage the next addition to your recession-resistant real estate portfolio. The Memphis market is a logistics and distribution dynamo with an economic engine that's essential to moving goods and critical supplies all over the United States. Quality rehab, proven profitable property management, affordable rents, and solid ROI make turnkey property investing through Terry's team a dream when it matters most. To learn more about Memphis and Mid-South home buyers, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia Top 100 Most Influential Financial Advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. Hey, join us virtually for the New Orleans Investment Conference. It's the longest running investment conference in the U.S. We'd love to be live in New Orleans to do it. And in fact, Russ and I will be. We've been invited by Jefferson Companies to be there live in New Orleans to help moderate and MC the virtual part of the conference. But the great news is you can attend from anywhere. Get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events, or just send an email to neworleans@realestateguysradio.com. It'll include the traditional Real Estate Guys suite party, this time brought to you online. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions are answers. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, just go to our website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. These two questions are kind of related, so I'm going to ask both the questions that we're going to delve into it. Question number one comes from Victor in Ocala, Florida. Hey guys, I want to learn how to pick a real estate market to invest in. I'm wondering what kind of data I should be looking at and how to interpret the data, and also where to find it. Are there any books or courses you could recommend? All right, Victor, hold that thought. Al from Richmond, British Columbia in Canada says, what drives real estate trends and what resources can help us follow the real estate trends globally? All right, so the trend is your friend. You need to understand what trends are in real estate and then find out how to get the information to decide where we are. And markets vary all across the world. So the big picture on finding market trends and discovering a great real estate market has to do with the suitability of the property, the viability of the income stream, and the age-old supply and demand question. All things being equal, rents are strong where there is demand for people to live in places. And so as investors, we're going to look for places that have strong economies, favorable tenant-landlord law, and good market metrics.
Yeah, so supply and demand for sure. And then capacity to pay. We talk about capacity to pay all the time. So, you know, on the macro, you look at things like interest rates and tax treatment, and that makes real estate more or less affordable, depending on which direction interest rates and taxes are going. When you look at supply and demand, that's demand is based on people wanting to live there, businesses wanting to live there. When you look at supply, it's building, the ability to build, the ability of the marketplace to expand supply if demand increases versus its inability. Places like Manhattan, San Francisco, they can't increase supply. So prices only have one way to go, and that's up based on capacity to pay. The other part is income. Income's a function of jobs, employment. It's also a function of just how well an economy is doing and how well people are being paid, and inflation, the cost of living, how much of a tenant's income needs to go towards eating and energy and healthcare versus how much can go to rent. So these are all factors that you have to take a look at. Some of them are macro. Some of them are local. And that's really the secret, is getting to know your local market all the way down to the street level. And so you can look at things in the macro and look at the data, and that's really the starting point. And then you transition down to where you're talking to your boots on the ground teams, the people who are in the streets, dealing with the tenants, dealing with the properties, feeling the trends. And you look at the big picture, which is the data that tells you what happened in the past. You listen to the anecdotal stories from the boots on the ground team about what's going on in the present, and then you can begin to draw a trend line, as Robert talked about, the trend being your friend. If the trend's moving in the wrong direction, if you're paying attention to the boots on the ground people, you're going to know that early and be able to respond quicker. If you're not, then the trend may be moving against you and you wouldn't recognize it because you're projecting something that happened in the past and missing what's happened in the present. So it's not complicated, but you do have to be diligent. That's why they call it due diligence.
For over 23 years on this show, I've said live where you want to live and invest where the numbers make sense. If you live in a place where there's great investment property, nothing says you can't invest there. But if we're going to presume for a minute that you're going to invest somewhere other than where you live, then you do need to study the market and understand the direction. So a market could be really great. A market could have a lot of jobs. And if they're all tied to one or two employers or industries, that could be a risk. So I generally favor markets that have what we call multiple stories. Lots of different reasons, lots of different industries, lots of different tenants and types of tenants that want to be there, even homeowners, business owners, and so on. And then we talked about the friendliness to landlords. That's going to be different in different places. And then overall affordability. When you're starting out, we talked a little about this last week, when you're starting out in real estate investing, you know, price is a factor. And so you want to find an affordable home that makes cash flow sense. As you build up your portfolio, well, you'd like to get more dollars to work. So you might find a more expensive market, or you just might find a bigger property, multifamily, commercial, those kinds of things in the markets you like. And eventually you have a portfolio that the size of it dictates you should have some diversity in product type and markets and so forth. So my premise is that you can't really pay attention to more than about a half a dozen real estate markets. If you're a full-time investor and it's all you do, okay, maybe 8 or 10 markets. But we can't know too many markets at the granular level we need to as real estate investors unless we're active in the market or we have a great boots on the ground team. Now, the real estate guys have quite a few markets that we pay attention to and invest in, and We have some education around that. We have a great Boots on the Ground segment where we check in regularly with folks we call providers. Those are either developers or brokers or turnkey operators that have inventory for investors in different markets. And we check in pretty regularly. We do that on our YouTube channel. So that's a great way to check out those markets. Now, that doesn't mean those markets are the markets for you, but you will pick up some of the nuances of the things we ask those providers and what they watch if you pay attention to that kind of information. As far as books or courses, that's a tough one. You know, this is not a sexy topic. And so all of the real estate books out there are about how to get rich quick or how to get started or how to make a fortune. Very few market-driven books or due diligence books or analysis books. In fact, I can't think of a great book on trends other than a book I used to teach out of when I taught in college. So I had a couple of college textbooks I used. Now, I'll tell you what, they're great for insomnia, but they do have some great content. I don't have a specific one I'd recommend, but if you look at real estate appraisal, real estate principles, real estate practices, some of those college-level courses that in many states are necessary for getting your real estate license, you can often find some information there. The other great resource, I think, are commercial real estate brokers. There are big brokerages that specialize in either multifamily or retail or industrial or residential, and they tend to do a great deal of study and put that information out. And the final resource we'll talk about, well, maybe not the final resource, I'll give you two more. Another one is BLS.gov. That's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You're paying for that site anyway, you might as well use it. BLS.gov gives you an idea about the diversity of income and industry in every market. It has a lot of great job information, so you can see is a market losing jobs, gaining jobs, in what segments, etc. And then finally, the Urban Land Institute is a really information-rich place to go. Almost all of their research is reserved for members and paid subscriptions, but occasionally they do publish reports and write articles, so ULI.org is a place to go for that.
One thing I'd like to tag on to that, Robert, you mentioned paying attention to commercial brokers in a marketplace. And you might say, well, I'm not really interested in commercial property, or maybe I'm not able to invest in commercial property. That doesn't matter. What they're going to be showing you is what the employers are doing. They're going to be showing you whether a distribution center is going in or a big office building is going in. Are CEOs moving in or moving out? That'll all show up in the commercial data. You know, you may not be even renting to those particular employees, but what we call primary drivers in a market are businesses that bring money in from outside the marketplace and create secondary and tertiary jobs, you know, because the people who are working in retail or in service businesses in a community, they're servicing people that are working at jobs that are bringing money elsewhere. So those may be the homeowners, but the people who are the renters are the people working those tertiary jobs. So they're all interconnected. And I think that's the main message, is that supply, demand, capacity to pay, interest rates, lending environment, and what's going on in the commercial all trickle down to residential, where it's where most people who are entry-level real estate investors tend to gravitate. And arguably, it's probably one of the most safest, stable niches in real estate to be in.
Another great source is the local Chamber of Commerce. They're not out selling real estate, but they absolutely know what industries they're courting, what companies are coming in, and then apartment associations. Again, if you're buying a single-family home, you might think, I don't need to pay attention to the apartment association. But to Russ's point, like a brokerage, the apartment association assembles and has access to a lot more data, and they're usually very well researched. Little mom and pop home brokerages don't do that kind of research and that reporting. So there's so much information. You just have to be aware of information overload and paralysis of analysis, but lots of great sources. Several years back, we were doing our two-day due diligence class on how to analyze markets and properties, and who knows, maybe one day we'll get enough peer pressure to put that course again together. But again, the whole thing about that was it was desperately needed by people, but there's no sizzle in it. In fact, it's kind of a hard course to teach and keep it fun because it's just so data-driven, but that's how we understand markets. So great questions today. We'll have more when we come back, and we'll ask you a question as we play Real Estate Trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. Registration is now open for the Real Estate Guys 19th Annual Investor Summit. Imagine spending an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals. Returning this year, our sales legend Tom Hopkins, the editor of the Gold Newsletter Brian London, international real estate developer Beth Clifford, and Jim Rohn's 18-year business partner Kyle Wilson. And joining us live and in person for his 9th Investor Summit, Peter Schiff. Plus, returning for his 9th Investor Summit, best-selling author and the Rich Dad Advisor for Real Estate, Ken McElroy. Plus, lots more to be announced. It all begins June 11th in beautiful Belize. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to reserve your spot. This transformational week is like no conference you've ever attended. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to spend a week with the Real Estate Guys, Peter Schiff, Ken McElroy, and an all-star faculty on the 19th Annual Investor Summit.
Don't be like Charlie, who scans the internet for IRA information, often getting bad information from copycats who have no idea what they're doing. You deserve to work with a reputable firm that specializes in one thing, the EQRP. Lucky for you, Congress just made it possible for you to get up to $200,000 out of your current 401k or TSP so you can invest that money in real estate or even your own business. Even if you're still working, it's possible to get access to all this money tax-free. Whether you're a full-time investor, a doctor, or a government employee, even if you have employees, the EQRP is your secret weapon. You'll never see the strategy in Money Magazine, only here with the Real Estate Guys. Every major accounting firm in America is quietly sharing this strategy with their wealthy clients, helping them get their funds freed from 401k jail. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we have your solution. With the CARES Act expiring soon, this strategy will be gone forever. The EQRP company is ready to help you unleash your retirement funds now. Want to learn more about this strategy? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com for my special EQRP report today.
Hey, this is Phil Collin from Def Leppard and Delta Deep. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. We're so glad you're here. It's Ask the Guys Today. That's when you send in questions and we give you some answers. If you have a question for The Real Estate Guys, go to our website at realestateguysradio.com. Click the button that says Ask the Guys and fire away. We certainly cannot answer every question, nor do we personally answer them except in rare occasion. But we look for the questions that we think have the most appeal to the broadest audience. We got a bunch of those great questions today. Before we get to the next one, it's time to play Real Estate Trivia. Your chance to win a prize by knowing our Real Estate Trivia question. As soon as you hear it and think you know the answer or just have a good guess, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. You want to give us your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to give you this awesome new book we've been talking about the last few weeks, Success Habits of Super Achievers. You just go to getsuccesshabitsbook.com to learn about that. It's an awesome collection of great inspirational stories, and you're going to love it, put together by our friend Kyle Wilson. That could be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question, and I'm going to tell you now, it's pretty easy. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, we were talking about the very affordable market of Indianapolis. We asked this. As you may know, Indianapolis is the largest city in Indiana, and it's the state capital, but it wasn't always named the previous state capital of the great state of Indiana. Well, the answer is Corydon. Indianapolis replaced Corydon as the state capital back in 1821. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. There are 7 continents on the planet Earth. Which one is the most populated? Yeah, name the most populated continent on Earth. Boy, that's an easy one. We have gotten some feedback that some of our questions might be just a little too hard to research, so there's one you can quickly figure out. If you think you know or you just want to fire off a fast response, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. We'll need your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address. The first person that gets it right gets this amazing new book, Success Habits of Super Achievers. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions are answers. This next question is actually 2 questions from 2 different listeners, but they're wrapped up together. Jason says, hi, I love the information you guys put out. What should be the ratio between how much silver, gold, and income property one should have? Best regards, Jason. Well, there's a simple question. Gary from Idaho Falls, Idaho has even a simpler one. About what percentage of my investment portfolio should be in precious metals? Well, let's step back. If you're new to listening to The Real Estate Guys, we are The Real Estate Guys, and that is the asset and product we love the most. But we believe that before you're a real estate investor, you're an investor. And you better understand that compared to what that Russ talked about. He was talking about markets and properties, comparing them to what, but also just investments in general. And so that's why on this show, we talk about more than just real estate. We talk about broader picture economics. We talk about oil and gas. We talk about agriculture. And we talk about precious metals. And this is something that our co-host knows a lot about.
It really begins with understanding what money is. If you approach the idea that you invest in real estate to make money, and you assume that those are dollars, then you need to know something about dollars and currency. And the bond markets is where interest rates are determined. And if you're going to use debt, then you need to understand the bond markets. If you really understand what money is, you'll recognize that for thousands of years, gold and silver have been money. And it's only been since 1971 in the world that gold and silver have not been money. There are people who think at some point it's inevitable we will go back to some form of sound money. Now, whether we do or we don't, for whatever reason, gold in particular, but gold and silver have maintained their status as monetary metals, and they have a role to play. That's why all central banks hold gold. And so if you understand that as an investor, then you don't think of silver and gold as an investment. You think of it as money. Robert, you mentioned energy, and I'm just going to tap into this real quick. There's no economy. There is no commerce. There is no economic activity without energy. If you don't understand energy, you can't understand economics. If you don't understand economics, then how do you make good investment decisions about renting and income and marketplaces so that you can take on debt? Real estate is a vehicle that allows you to own a real asset, a tangible asset that is can't really be taken or stolen because it's physically there unless it's legally the title is taken. So use legal mechanisms to protect yourself there. It allows you to acquire a lot of debt, which allows you to go short the currency, which is failing over time, which is not conspiracy theory, it's proven. And so you are able to go into debt and then use the cash flow on the property and the tax breaks to benefit from the inevitable inflation. Well, gold and silver have that same role in your portfolio. They don't maybe make you money as much as they preserve your purchasing power. So that's kind of how they all fit together. Now, to get to the specific questions is what should the ratio be? To me, the ratio question is how much cash and how much precious metal should I have as a percentage of my liquid assets, right? My liquidity. We had a chance to interview Donald Trump one time before he was President Trump, before he was even candidate Trump. And we asked him, what did you learn in the downtimes? He says, it's always good to have a little cash. Having gone through 2008, which was a downtime, not having enough cash, recognize the wisdom in those words. So the question is what form do you want to hold your cash in? Personally, I like about 50-50 precious metals and real dollars. That way, if dollars fail, I'm okay. If I want to convert into a different currency, I can pivot into any currency I want with silver or gold, especially gold. Now you say, what should the ratio be between gold and silver? Well, it depends on you, right? I like 50 to 1, 50 pieces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. Mike Maloney comes out and he's the guy that runs gold and silver. He's a big gold silver guru. He says 500 to 1. So it really doesn't matter. It depends on what you're trying to do. You pay a bigger premium to own silver. You have to wait longer for it to be worth it, but you could make the argument that it has a lot more upside, especially in today's environment. In fact, Dana Samuelson and I just did a 9-part series we call the Silver Series on YouTube. You can get information on that at silverseries@realestateguysradio.com, and we'll tell you how you can find that. So it's really not a percentage of your portfolio. It's how much liquidity should I have, which is going to be a function of what your burn rate is if your main streams of income were to fail, just like your quintessential emergency fund. How much cash do you need to have in reserve? And then out of those cash reserves, how much should be actual dollars? How many of those dollars should be in the bank versus outside the bank? And how much should be precious metals? And that mix is really going to depend on you and your short path to cash. So it's not really a magic formula. I know you're ready to take a note and have me tell you exactly what it should be. You're going to have to figure it out. I think it's more important that you understand what the role of these different things are in your portfolio. And maybe at some point we'll do a whole show or I'll do some type of a YouTube webinar and really kind of drill into this because it comes up a lot. Great questions. Glad you're thinking about it. Keep studying. I think that you're on the right track.
A lot of traditional financial planners are big on the percentages. You want 10% in bonds, you want 20% mutual funds, you want 5%. Those are fine for the average person. The average person isn't listening to a podcast on real estate investing and certainly isn't asking questions about silver and gold and the role they play in your portfolio. And so it is very personal. It also has to do, I think, with your tolerance of risk. If you believe that the dollar will continue to go down in value relatively and that there will be demand by central banks and individuals and other folks for metals, then you're going to have a different allocation than if you just want to have a little on hand just in case. The average person in America, average person, owns less than 1 ounce of any metal. So we're not talking about a mainstream idea, even though you hear about the price of gold and silver quite regularly. It's usually to illustrate some comparative metric to the stock market or the dollar. But we're big believers in having it in your portfolio. I would say start with an ounce, right? Just the minute you have an ounce in your pocket, you feel different. You start to pay attention. That's a great place to start. Relatively inexpensive if you start with an ounce of silver and then go up from there. There are folks they call gold bugs. They just put everything in gold and silver and palladium and platinum. And, you know, if you want to get educated on that, that's awesome. As real estate guys, we see some pretty cool ways to kind of have liquidity in metals, but some even other interesting ideas, one of which Russ covers on the Silver Series. So again, if you're interested in the metals and you're a real estate investor, just send an email to silverseries@realestateguysradio.com. Our next question comes from Omer in Orlando, Florida. Hey guys, I appreciate the wisdom that you share on your show. I am fortunately in a position to invest because I pulled out of the stock market last summer. What do you see in the multifamily space in Orlando? Are there certain markets that are more tempting to invest in from a cash flow perspective? All right, great question. And obviously, we like real estate. We like multifamily real estate for a lot of reasons. And you probably know we're big fans of Orlando. So Orlando, or the greater Orlando market, is what we were talking about earlier, a diverse market with a lot of different stories. You think of Orlando as a big convention town, as a big recreation town with all the theme parks and so forth, but there's so much more to Orlando and greater Orlando. So big picture, bullish on Orlando. Short term, Orlando's felt some of the sting of the pullback in jobs in the service industry. And so when you look at multifamily there, and multifamily across the board, cap rates have been compressed, meaning that the returns have gone down in this type of asset everywhere because more dollars have been chasing the investment. So you see today there are big groups, investment and insurance funds, and people that are buying Class A apartments at a 2 cap, which means that's not a lot of return, hard to compete with that. But the great news about Orlando is it is a multifaceted market and there's tons of submarkets and we actually pay attention to quite a few of them.
Yeah, well, Central Florida is huge for a lot of reasons. One is it's affordable. It's a no-tax state. It's a place that a lot of people up in the Northeast would normally want to retire to anyway. And so they've had a great net in-migration for quite a long time. Economically, Central Florida is a very, very strong metro. You've got the space industry, medical industry, research, in addition to hospitality and convention. So there's a lot of things going on there that have it make sense. To Robert's point, there is some weakness right now. It's no secret that Disney's a big employer there, especially for tenant class type service workers and working class folks. And so you could look at some of the current slowdown as an opportunity. You need to wait for it to have it run its course. But if there's going to be some distress in that market, you have to ask yourself, is what has ever caused that distress, is that likely to continue or is it a temporary situation? Is this a dip, if you will, that you could step into and buy? So now is a great time to start paying attention to the market. Omer, you live there, so it's easy, but it's also easy to overlook a lot of things. So you need to treat it like you're an out-of-towner. You need to subscribe to things that where people are talking about it, look at the reports and the analysis, develop a boots-on-the-ground team in the different asset classes, read the commercial real estate reports that come out, especially in the multifamily space. There's going to be a lot of them. And then begin to build relationships with people that are active in the space. There's probably investment clubs. There's probably people that are active there, either online or, you know, live. And eventually that'll probably come back. Go out there and look at a lot of properties, really get to know the neighborhood. And then eventually develop relationships with commercial mortgage brokers, people that actually do the financing of multifamily properties, because they really know what's going on. Unlike the residential 1-4, where the individual borrower is largely the focus of the underwriting, when you do multifamily, the property and the market that it's in is largely the focus of the underwriting. So the brokers that operate in that space, they really understand what's going on in the market. They know what the trends are. They know what the problems are. And the lenders are paying a lot of attention. So when you get into those relationships early, those people that can actually help coach you up and make some introductions to people that can help you find the opportunities you're looking for.
We have some great folks in that marketplace, Gene and Wagner, and you can just send an email to centralflorida@realestateguysradio.com, and you'll get some of their great information. And they put out a pretty good regular heartbeat of details on what's happening in the markets. That's a good place to start. Central Florida at realestateguysradio.com. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys Radio program, Ask the Guys. We've got more questions next. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
The Real Estate Guys are throwing a party and you're invited. Join us at the New Orleans Investment Conference, October 14th through 17th. Now in its 46th year, it's the nation's longest running investment conference and features some of the biggest names in economics and investing, including Jim Rickards, Danielle DiMartino Booth, Rick Rule, Doug Casey, Peter Schiff, and Robert Kiyosaki. And for the first time, the conference will be presented live virtually, so you'll save the travel expenses. The Real Estate Guys are speaking again this year, and we're hosting a virtual hospitality suite one of the evenings with some very special guests. So make plans to join the Real Estate Guys at the New Orleans Virtual Investment Conference. With everything going on in the world, no serious investor can afford to miss it. Send an email to neworleans@realestateguysradio.com and we'll get you all the details. That's neworleans@realestateguysradio.com.
Having trouble finding deals where the numbers make sense? Invest in an asset class that delivers cash flow to you in good times and bad, and where most of that cash flow is tax-free. I'm Dave Zook. Many of you have heard me speak at Real Estate Guys events or heard me on their podcast. My team is a top 5 ATM operator in the country, and right now accredited investors can make cash flow returns well into the double digits and get huge tax deductions. For your free report on this lucrative asset class, email atm@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Mauricio Raul, the founder and CEO of Mir Law Group, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Our great friends Chris Martinson and Adam Taggart have their Peak Prosperity annual seminar coming up near the end of this month. You can find out the details at our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We would love to see you virtually there. It's Ask the Guys, your questions and our answers. If you have a question for the guys, you can just click the Ask the Guys button on our website at realestateguysradio.com. This question comes from Gabe in Barnesville, Minnesota. Hey, Real Estate Guys, I found your podcast about 2 months ago and really appreciate the information you guys provide. I've been interested in becoming a real estate investor for a number of years. I'm finally in a position to do so. I want to start to build a portfolio for myself and my family so I can start to move away from my career in construction. I've been in and out of construction since I was a kid and have seen from the outside how real estate can be a great investment for many. I also became a real estate investor in 2006 and was doing pretty well when the 2008 situation hit. And due to some problems not created by myself, I had to move on to another job and found myself back in construction. I'm very good with mentors and would love to find someone that could help me formulate a plan to begin investing in real estate. I'd love your input and advice. Thanks for your time and look forward to your reply. Well, Gabe, you're on the right track. First of all, I think the thing to acknowledge is you have some experience and skill set that actually could help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of people who are active in real estate, and a big part of real estate investing, successful real estate investing, is value add. That's where you find a property that maybe isn't in great shape or isn't being run well, and you need to go through it and look for opportunities to make capital improvements, and those capital improvements create greater appeal to tenants, collect higher rents, and create more equity in the property, which then can be leveraged. You take the higher income and pull the equity out and use it as a down payment on the next property. We call that breeding equity. To make all that happen, someone who really understands construction, who really knows what they're looking at and can know if the bid is accurate, can make sure the teams are going to come in on time and on budget, is a huge asset. So you may not know the financial side, you may not know some of the transaction or deal side of things, but you understand the construction side. So I would go out into the marketplace and start looking for people who are active real estate investors and find out if, A, maybe they need some work done, but if you could get into a situation where you consult with them, that puts something on your resume where you can say, my partners and I did this project, or I acted as a consultant on X number of real estate deals, even though you may not have even been a principal. If you had consulted on it, it starts to go on your resume. So not only do you get the experience, but you also get the resume, you get the marketing creds, if you will, so that later on down the road, when you want to go take on investment partners who are going to fund the deals that you're going to do, which I think from what you've said, it sounds like you just got to a place financially where you can invest. Well, you don't have to wait to keep going. You can go create a value for other investors who have more capital than you do, but don't have what you have, which is the construction knowledge and the relationships that you'll build and the hustle that you'll build. And so that's really, to me, where I would go starting from where you're at. And then as far as asset class or niche, I would stick with stuff that you know. If you do residential construction today and that's what you know, then I would start there. If it's commercial construction that you know, then maybe you can find small office buildings or small, you know, industrial buildings or whatever that you could work on. So, you know, you really didn't reveal where that was, but I would start in what you know, where you have some existing relationships, and then branch out from there.
Obviously be aware of market cycle and timing. You know, you invested last time going into kind of an ugliness, then we did the same thing. And we're in a very precarious place right now. But the great news about forcing equity, when you have the skill set to take a property that needs help and give it that help, is you can do that pretty quickly and make money even in a market that's flat or sometimes going down. But I think Russ is onto something, and that is leveraging who you are and that experience working in construction since you were a kid. I know your mindset is, I want to get out of that. But imagine how having someone like you looks on the resume of a person going out and raising money for a real estate deal. Hey, we got a guy, Gabe, who has been in construction his whole life. Whether or not you ever swing a hammer again, that is just great experience. And the way to leverage that, of course, is the world of real estate syndication. If you're interested in finding out more, just send an email to syndication@realestateguysradio.com and you come out to our next syndication event in March of next year. Great questions today. We're going to do another Ask the Guys segment here in the near future because we've got a bunch more questions, but it doesn't mean we don't need yours. Just go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. Our last question comes from Merritt in Houston, Texas. Hi, guys. I purchased a buy and hold property with hard money 14 months ago, planning to refinance it with conventional financing in less than 60 days, but I haven't been able to because I declared too many deductions and losses on my tax return. I'm paying too much in hard money interest, and by the end of the year, I'm also paying about $5,000 in taxes and insurance. I would appreciate any advice you can give me. All right, Merritt, well, this is actually a fairly common thing, and it really happens to folks who are trying to use a particular tool for a particular job, and we love hard money. Big picture on hard money, it's private money. It's more expensive. You pay 3, 4, 5 points up front, and you pay a higher interest rate, maybe 10 or 12%. But still, it's a great tool because it's nimble, it's quick, you can move money quickly, you can buy properties with hard money that aren't in A1 shape and fix them up. A lot of reasons to like hard money, but not a lot of reasons to like being stuck in a hard money loan.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're a doer, so congratulations. But it also sounds like you got out a little over your skis, which is often what doers do. Coming from the mortgage side of the business, it sounds like what you did was you had it in your mind that you would be able to refinance, but you hadn't consulted with a mortgage professional to make sure that you were ready to go before you pulled the trigger. It takes time to prepare your financials, up to 2 years to put together a financial profile that will allow you to obtain optimum financing depending on where you're starting from. So if you're starting from scratch and your financials are not really highly lendable for prime money, then you're going to have 2 years of work to do to make them look that way because you can't run around and do these no-doc loans the way, you know, that they used to do in the old days. I mean, it's loosening up a little bit, but it's never going to be like it was. That's the first thing I would do is right away I would go get a real assessment about where you're at and say, what can I do to begin to improve that. Another option for you, which you may or may not be willing to consider, is to find a credit partner. If you find somebody who right now is ready to go and can do the deal, you're going to save some money. And maybe some of that savings can be shared with the person who brings the credit. Maybe you can find somebody that's got good credit that would want your mentorship, that would want a piece of the deal, that would want some of the deal on their resume. There's different reasons besides just money that people are willing to participate in a deal. So you may have to shop around a little for that. But a lot of young people have good credit and documentable income, and they don't have any way to put it to work because they don't have a down payment. They don't have the knowledge or the experience. Whereas it sounds like, you know, you've got a little bit of experience and you've got a little bit of money to work with. So you have something to offer. So either partner with somebody, but certainly get involved with mortgage professionals who are coaching you and actively managing your credit portfolio and your borrowing power the same way you manage your property. It's a very powerful asset. And sadly, most people don't pay any attention to it. They just think it'll be there ready for them when they need it. And then they show up to the marketplace and the marketplace goes, nope, you're not really what we're looking for right now. And now you've got to wait.
It's an excellent lesson for anyone who's listening, who's thinking about buying a property that needs some work, using hard money. Those are all great things to do. But before you do that, meet with a mortgage professional to say, how do I get out of it? We have a couple of providers for the Real Estate Guys that help people find properties that need a lot of work and help them get the work done. But they're going to get a hard money loan or bridge financing loan up front with the intention to refinance in 6 months. And they start the process for both those loans at the same time. That's what you have to do in this kind of a situation. Otherwise, you find yourself stuck. Well, great questions today. I'm sorry we didn't get to them all, but excellent to hear from our Real Estate Guys listeners. Coming up in June of next year, it is the 19th annual Investor Summit and registration's open. We'd love to have you join us. It's going to be extraordinary. It's the first time in 19 years we won't be on a cruise ship for part of it. We're going to be at a beautiful resort in Ambergris Key, Belize. You can get all the details at our website at realestateguysradio.com. And click the button that says Summit. Next week, another fabulous show on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys radio show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.